I said, could I take those over and try and help you and sell some things? I then went through the process of sort of deconstructing what they were to think, if this is outside a busy street and people are walking past, which products would be most likely to sell, most relevant, and then how do you sell them?
If you're at all curious what it's like to start an ad agency at the worst possible time, this might be the podcast for you. That's because I started one last year and my God, it is hard. So what I'm doing is I'm talking to people who have found success in our industry and then applying what I learned to my own life and business. If it doesn't work, I'm screwed. All right, so this isn't as much of a gush update. It's more of a gush reflection. So one of the things that I mentioned last time on the last episode with Kenny in the beginning is that we lost a client. I'm not going to say who the client is, but I wanted to dig into how I think we lost that client, what I learned from it, because there's kind of a lot to unpack there. So we had been working with them. They really were the one that allowed me to go from just me doing everything to having some freelancers support me. You know, we got into email marketing through them. We were running media. We were creating ads. And, you know, I developed, as I do, and this is genuine, I'm not just blowing smoke, I developed a genuine interest in wanting them to succeed. And I think sometimes that level of passion for me, I can get a little bit carried away. But anyways, so I had an account person join. We were starting to build a process around making sure that we were on the same page before going out and creating content. And that really just means a discovery call, a brief, you know, approvals, that kind of thing. And the task at hand, something that we spent a lot of time selling through, was to help with B2B marketing, wholesale marketing. So this is stuff like, you know, translating a sales pitch into an entertaining video that communicates the same information, creating GIFs to make email marketing to prospective B2B customers more engaging, that sort of thing. And in order to do that, we didn't get much money, but what I wanted was I wanted to be able to do a shoot with just me and a videographer and a studio space. But in order to do that, we kind of had to do everything at cost. Like I wasn't paid for my time or anything like that. And it was the first time that we created and really set in motion this process of, you know, putting a brief together, all agreeing on the brief, and then sharing a script, agreeing to the script, and then going and shooting it. You know, we spent a lot of time putting together the brief. Everybody agreed to it. One of the videos we were making was a holiday video. You know, Christmas was coming up, and so we had to do the shoot really quickly. One of the founders was gone. One of the founders was there. We wrote a script, and he had basically a day to approve it, but he did. And, you know, we were making a bunch of things. We were probably across five different, you know, mini briefs. We were making a total of 15 pieces of content. You know, for this specific one, it was about 2.5K all in to make a video, like about a minute long video that we were going to shoot and edit, and then two supporting GIFs. What happened was we delivered the video completely based on the script, the scene direction. There wasn't any difference. And then the client decided that they didn't like it. They felt like it was off strategy based on what we had done. But the strategy we had done didn't really involve comedy, and they had asked for comedy. I'll just give you the idea really quick. So basically, you know, one way to obviously prove to somebody, instead of just telling them that you sell a great product, is through real testimonials. The problem is during COVID, we couldn't get anybody to come in and offer a testimonial. And so we thought it would be funny if I wore disguises and pretended to be these different people giving testimonials. And so it was COVID-friendly testimonials recreated. So stupid thing, but entertaining. And they decided that it distracted too much from the message, but we had already gone and done the shoot. And, you know, that's a sunk cost. We had already paid the videographer and, you know, we did two GIFs. We didn't just make that video. You know, they came back and they were really disappointed, which was obviously a surprise to us. And the people we had shared it with absolutely loved it. So that was a surprise. They liked everything else, but that was a surprise. And so what we offered to do was to do those videos as GIFs and create like more straightforward testimonial GIFs, basically, which would be an out-of-pocket cost to us. But like, obviously, you know, we can't go and pay for another shoot, particularly on budget where we're not making any money. And that wasn't good enough for them. They felt like they had paid for, you know, a video and then they were going to get some gifts to replace it. And that felt unfair. And they felt like, you know, in their business, they have a customer is always right approach. And that is to do at any cost to make them happy. And, you know, I kind of told them that we weren't going to do that. You know, we created this process. They agreed to it. You know, we're willing to offer to make it good at a cost to us in a way that is reasonable. You know, we're not going to just refund you for everything. And they were pissed about that. Basically, they were, you know, it kind of rubbed them the wrong way, obviously. And we weren't really making any money off the account. We had kind of outgrown it. It sort of over the course of like a day or a couple of days leading up to that decision on my part, we just decided to part ways. And they had a conversation with my dad. And he was like, you should never leave a relationship, particularly one as important as this. They helped to give you your start with a bad taste in their mouth. You know what I mean? And so I thought about it some more and I really tried to see things from their perspective. You know, there's a couple things. One is this is a new process. It was something new. So even though they agreed to it, you know, they haven't gone through that process before. And maybe they had a hard time imagining exactly what we were thinking. And then also they had like a day to approve it. So given that, you know, we offered a refund for the full $2,500, still delivered those two gifts. You know, do I think it's totally fair? No. But do I think I did the right thing? And do I understand where they're coming from? Yes, like 100%. And so I'm like really glad I did it. You know, we still parted ways. They wanted to continue email marketing. So I offered them the freelancer that was doing it. They wanted to also have the copywriter that was working on it. I gave them that person. And I don't know exactly how they feel, but I think they feel good about the relationship overall and appreciate that I came around and gave them a refund. And if I could go back and do it again, I would still give them the refund. I'm curious what you guys think. I don't, you know, if only you guys were on the phone and I could take calls, you could tell me if I'm an idiot or if I'm an idiot because I should have done it right away and not waited a day to change my mind, or if I'm a sucker. I don't really know. But I wanted to share that experience. I'm, again, happy I did it. And I felt like I learned a lesson there. And we'll just sort of see how those inevitable situations evolve as we work with more clients. Anyways, just to quickly introduce you guys to the guest today, his name is Dave Dye. He was the head of art and design at J. Walter Thompson until 2017, when he started a psychology-based advertising firm. So it's psychology-led creative, which I think a lot of people claim, but like he literally has psychologists informing briefs to create harder-hitting creative, more effective creatives. So I thought that was really interesting. And this is a guy who is passionate about advertising. He's doing exactly what he should be doing. And you know he's passionate about advertising because he did an experiment where he, for free, took over one of those like kind of sandwich signs, you know, the stanchions that he put outside of like a coffee shop or something to get people's attention on the sidewalk. He got a grocery store owner to agree to let him take over that and write ads on it to see if he can improve sales. And thank God it worked. And creativity is not dead, but it's really interesting, you know, the types of experiments he made and how it impacted things, the stuff that didn't work and the stuff that did. So I think you guys are going to really enjoy it. Without further ado, Dave Dye. Obviously, you have a blog and a podcast as well that's successful and gets a lot of positive feedback. And one of the things that I saw that I really dug that was written about you or that you kind of wrote about, I don't know if it was on the blog per se, but there was a deli near you and there was this board.
Oh yeah.
Right. And to me, it seems like if you can make a deli board work to drive sales, you know, you're good at advertising. So I'm curious, because you said you did it for 6 weeks and you treated them like ad spaces. So what happened?
I suppose because I do my blog, which I've been doing for quite a while now. And generally it's a sort of odd combination of interviewing people whose work I love, putting out old work that I may have done and showing the process or talking about some aspects. I'm just in the middle of doing a 5-part thing on different fashion campaigns and whatever I'm interested in at the time, I guess. I mean, because advertising has got so complicated, scientific, pretentious, and lost its way, it seems to me, we seem so far away from the original purposes, which was, we have these products, how do we sell more of them to make more money? Quite basic. But it seems like now there's so many other things that are kicking around that seem to be in front of that, that I was thinking it would be good to do something that's very, very basic piece of communication. And I thought it would be useful to go through a journey to show a evolution of something as basic and simple as I could possibly find, that's almost not worthy of so much attention, to just show even something as basic you can make emotional and simple and dynamic. And while I was waiting for my coffee one day at the local deli, I read their A board, and it seemed to have about 100 different things that they sell, all in this tiny little writing. And because I was waiting there with nothing to do, I was reading it and thinking, God, who the hell would ever read all those things off of a board that essentially is outside the store that you walk past? And it occurred to me that actually that would be a really good thing to try and take that and sell some things through it. So I quite liked, but it also worried me, the idea of thinking, well, let's try to use what I've learned over the last 30 odd years and see if I can actually sell some things directly in the street to passers-by. It's like doing a billboard outdoors. So I asked the owner, who's a friend of mine, I said, could I take those over and try and help you and sell some things? So I then went through the process of sort of deconstructing what they were to think, obviously, it's better if you have one clear message that's loud rather than 10 that are quiet. And then what kind of messages should we have? What would we focus on? What's it best if this is outside a busy street and people are walking past? Which products would be most likely to sell, most relevant, and then how do you sell them? You know, so, and then I sort of took that over for 6 weeks. Some of the ones that I did were complete failure. Some of them sold out of things. You know, it was a real mixture. So I was sort of quite open to admit, you know, obviously I was hoping it went well and that they sold out of everything. It would be an empty shop of just floorboards and sawdust. But if it didn't, I was happy to sort of to go through the process. So, and I went through that and did, I think, 2 or 3 blog posts over that period to show what happened. And ultimately, the sales over that period went up, I think, 11%, I think it was. So, which is actually a lot across everything, you know. But it was interesting. And what I learned through doing it, you know, having looked at what worked and what didn't, what I found was that the simplest ads were the best. The things that were most humorous and unusual were the best. The things that said something positive about a particular product were, but all the things that really I knew 30 years ago, but somehow when you distance yourself from the process, write it all down and start again, it was a good kind of reminder, really.
So let's go through that. So what were the core takeaways and what did you learn from an ad that totally failed and an ad that totally succeeded? Just to use specific examples.
One of the ongoing things for a deli is coffee. They potentially can sell lots of it. They make a lot of margin on coffee. And there's a massive posh upmarket school nearby. So I thought, let's try and appeal to all of the mums who clog up the streets with their big 4x4s at, you know, 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon and say, why not grab a coffee? So I thought, well, let's pick out, most things are better if they're specific. So rather than grab a coffee, if you say, well, what coffee might they like? Maybe a skinny latte. They all sort of seem to wear Lycra of some description. So maybe the healthiest version of the coffee that they sell, and then call out the school. So it said, hey, Channing's mum's, fancy a skinny latte or something. It may have been even cleverer than that, but it was that sort of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So then what happened is various mums came in to the store and they were offended because whereas I'd sort of said, I thought, well, let's take into account that they're health conscious, so let's call out one of their healthier coffees, they'd taken it as, so do you think we're fat? Is that what you're saying? Which was, you know, it's the sort of thing that when you're in an agency, you get feedback like that from research groups and you go, well, they must have been mad, the ones that spoke to you. Whereas when you're dealing with the owner yourself and she's had people come in to complain, that effectively it's as if you've taken that board to say, hey, fatty, why not have a skinny drink rather than a full fat drink? So that was kind of odd. And I sort of initially said, well, it's great that it's drawing, that the boards are drawing people in. You've got to be happy. as a joke, which he wasn't happy about, because potentially that's an audience that is problematic if you sort of, if you fall out with them, because it's a huge big school nearby. So that was in the first week. That was obviously one of the least successful ones.
Just out of curiosity, did it sell more coffee?
I can't remember whether, because we got derailed with the issue on that board. This is the thing. If you think, oh, actually, I will go in with and get a skinny latte or get any coffee, you don't announce it when you walk in. You don't think, I'm coming in on the basis of that board and I'm going to order the drink it recommended. So it may well have affected sales positively, but it was completely dwarfed by 5 or 6 people coming in with an issue with it. So I can't actually remember whether it sold any more coffee. There was an interesting thing at the end that I did, because everything that I wrote about, I sort of divided them up. There were 2 boards, which was 4 sides. And every week, because cheese is a big part of their thing, I would do one on cheese. And it seemed like anything I would write or come up with, cheese sales would be big. I thought, God, it's as if nothing seems to affect. Every time I do one, they have sales are up. They just seem to go up and up. And then it occurred to me, maybe it's just because it's saying cheese and it's saying inside. If I wrote cheese on a board with an arrow, maybe that would just do just as well. I'm trying to come up with things that are humorous and insights and think, how do I make it impactful? I could just as well write cheese with an arrow. And I thought, bingo, I'll do that. I'll do that as a test. Then as the week went on, I had to sort of ask her how it went. I said, look, how did it go? She said, you know what? For some reason, we had a bad week on cheese. So I was absolutely...
Hell yeah. Me too. I was so worried about what you were going
to
say.
Yeah. No, I was trying not to sort of have a big, huge smile when her profits were down. But I was thinking, oh, thank God. I was really thrilled. And I don't know, I did worry that it would sort of throw the whole thing into complete waste of time with me sort of selfishly kicking around little visual things and jokes and insights and thinking that all goes out the window if you're just really saying, prosciutto or cheese with arrows on it. That works just as well.
Yeah, I was so worried about that.
That week, the sales crashed, weirdly, which again was encouraging. And I thought I would report all this stuff out very honestly. Otherwise, why do it? Why do it and have a sort of fictional thing where you sort of either dig yourself up or give sort of false results? So I would have said, unfortunately, this happened, but it didn't. So that was encouraging.
So from a process perspective, I'm just going to kind of repeat back what you were giving me and tell me if I'm right.
Yeah.
Your process was figuring out, who you were targeting. In the example of the lattes, you were just like, okay, coffee is something that they could sell is a big margin. Let's focus on that because that could really deliver results for them. And then let's look at people in this environment that are going to be walking by who would maybe want to buy coffee, and let's try and communicate to them. And then it was about an insight that was true of these women that connects to the product you're trying to sell.
Yeah.
Okay. And so in that case, it was, all right, these moms care about cutting calories and it's just part of their consumer behavior and whatever. And you didn't have to dig that deep into it, I'm guessing, in terms of its insecurity or whatever, but it was enough.
There were no planners involved in this project. It was...
But arguably, creatives are better planners a lot of the time, in my experience.
No, I mean, I think it was a sort of like a back to basics type thing. So, and for that reason, it was good to sort of just try and connect the pieces. You've got, which product do you focus on? Essentially, you've got foot traffic going by. Obviously, if you can get people to come in to buy a coffee, once they're in and they're waiting, like I'm looking at their A board, they might think, oh, I'll get some of those olives or I'll get some of this. So, I mean, the hard part is getting them in. And I think that was the thing that seemed to come from it, is that one of the overall things that when I sort of did a review of what had happened is that M&A said there was a lot of new faces that she didn't recognize.
So talk about that strategy. So do you think there's a legitimate approach, it may be a good approach and a takeaway, where you focus on one product, maybe it's cheese, maybe it's coffee or whatever, to get new audiences in or to attract people with one thing, and then it has a ripple effect across the rest of the company, something that gets them in the door?
Well, I think it would just be like the old strategies on, BMW. You might go on TV and do an ad for the BMW 7, whereas most people could only afford the 3. But you want to buy into that, that gets you in, that gets you interested in the brand potentially. So the first job is to stop someone, because if they ignore your sign, everything else is irrelevant. The second is to give them some information. And the third, I guess, is to come in. So even if they stop, read it, that's still really useful, because they may come in next time once they're in, particularly if they've never been there, then there's a chance that they can kind of look around. It may mean that they come in more often. It may mean that they look across the shelves and see something that they buy.
That's awesome. I mean, I love that you did that. And you seem like an ad nerd in all the best ways and all, you know, similar ways that I am, and just wanting to figure it out. And that's awesome. It kind of ties in, you know, in trying to understand the psychology of stuff to what it seems like you're focused on now, right? You have a very psychologically driven approach with the work you're doing now. So what is that all about? What's the agency, or is it an agency? How would you describe it?
Yeah, we set up an agency perfectly timed about 4 months before the global pandemic.
Same.
I mean, I guess all these things are probably connected in some subconscious way, but again, it was a combination of factors, which is, I think advertising's gone through a kind of weird time. You know, there's lots of, certainly in this country, there's lots of data that says it's never been less trusted, less engagement. I mean, all the factors are down. You know, when I sort of got into the business, it was, you know, people quite liked it. Now it's, I mean, it's partly again with digital. Digital, unfortunately, its role in your life is often irritating. You know, if you watch a TV program and an ad comes on, you kind of, you've learned to live with that. And then occasionally they can be quite fun or they're quite interested. But there's not many good experiences digitally where you think, great, there's a little pop-up just popped up. Let's see what they've got to say, you know. So that intrusive element, a lot of marketers love because it's so targeted and whatever, whatever. But from a consumer point of view, it's often fantastically annoying. So that doesn't help. But it doesn't seem like a golden age. It doesn't seem like there's lots of stimulating, exciting stuff that you wish you'd done. I suppose, you know, in the same way that I'd kind of done that sort of back to basics kind of tests, I thought, well, the thing that instead of tech, which obviously we all have to understand and work with, what's interesting to me is figuring out how you connect with other human beings, how you make them feel something, how you persuade them of something, how you get them to think, God, that seems so cool, that product. I must get one. Because that's ultimately why I got into the business. You know, you figure out how to sort of create things and connect with people. So we set up this agency, my agency, called Love or Fear, because they're the two strongest triggers for doing anything. They're the reason that most people do anything at all. You know, when we work on briefs, we'll pull in therapists, psychologists, and we'll try and understand, well, what is their relationships with cars in general? What is the, what, how do they feel about this brand versus this thing? It's not like a new thing. This has kind of been going on for a long time, but it's something that we would say, this is our thing that we're interested in most. You know, we've gone through a period where most agencies have sort of tried to present themselves as tech companies, rather than human companies. And I think that effectively over the last 20 years, advertising has gone from the people you go to figure out how you talk to your audience, to the people who kind of run the numbers and figure out the tech. But again, it's all a bit more cut the bullshit, back to basics. What's the job? Why do people spend money with you? And they spend money with you because they want to make money, really.
This is a bit of a tangent, but I really like your writing on your blog. And I'm somebody that's trying to get better at writing. And you really have like a vulnerability and a cadence and just a way of communicating that I aspire, not to get like too brown nosy, but I aspire to kind of get there. And so I'm curious about your writing process as maybe it compares to mine, so that I can learn from you. How do you go about it? How much planning? Do you just kind of stream of conscious and then tweak it? Do you have a general idea?
It helps to not really care too much what people think of you. What I'm saying is if I'd have tried to write my blogs 20 years ago, there'd be a sea of insecurities and stuff about how I'm presenting myself. I don't really give a shit now. I just say it as it is, you know, because for whatever reason. So that helps, because then, you know, you're not trying to build some artifice. You're just sort of trying to say what you think. I suppose I am now and again conscious that I've not gone through being an art director. I've not gone through the sort of rigors. I would watch all of my writers have to present their words to people like Tim Delaney or you know, whoever it may be, David Abbott, and they'd come back with sheets full of scribbled and changes. And so I didn't go through that, but I say that in a way that I wish I did, really, because there's a lot of technical stuff that I think, well, I don't know whether you're supposed to use a colon or a semicolon, or should you do this, you know. People talk about rhythms and stuff that you think, well, I don't know where I feel those as much. But so I don't know, really. I mean, I sort of just kind of think clearly and lay it out. You know, it's like anything. The more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it, pushing words around and taking words out.
You quoted Steven Spielberg in a way that I actually hadn't seen this quote before that I really like, which is, you know, he was asked at a moment when he had the top grossing films ever, how did he pick such good scripts? And he's just like, you know, I just pick ones I like, and I figure if I like it, other people will too. I think that's awesome. And figuring out what you like and trusting that gut feeling. So how do you work with your own gut? Has the guttural feeling become more present for you? And have you gotten more confident in your taste? Have you seen that, like, people dig the stuff that you dig?
I suppose you learn over time to have your sort of antennas up, really, and it's difficult to be completely tuned into everything. But obviously nothing can be too simple, really, I don't think. So simplifying is crucial in every element. Simplifying something down is crucial. I think in the same way that I was saying earlier about someone's walking past this deli, what might be relevant to them? So trying to figure out whether that's what you're saying is relevant to the person you're saying it to is crucial. Trying to make it relevant, trying to bring new light on a subject. So again, it's trying to figure out who you're talking to and what you might say that would be relevant. And sometimes, you know, I'll teach things, and often the most effective thing to say to some of the students is, would you say that to your friend? You know, where you said, this is the most awesome experience, this car, that you'll ever have in your life, or whatever they may have written. And I say, right, now say that to your friend. Would you say that? And went, well, I wouldn't say it, no. You go, well, you're saying it via words on a page. If it would make you giggle awkwardly if you tried to say that with a straight face to your friend, don't try and say it in a billboard, because it's the same thing. They still won't believe it. How would you persuade your friend to buy this car? What would you say if it was a one-to-one conversation? You wouldn't patronize them. You wouldn't lie. You'd try and figure out where they're coming from and how what you could say that may affect them. So trying to figure out how you make it real, believable, interesting to engage with, all those things makes it more, yeah, it gives you more chance of actually helping the company you're being paid for.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So given that you're a teacher, and this is the last question I like to end with, you know, what's one something I didn't ask you that maybe I should have asked you as a student of advertising and someone who's trying to get an agency off the ground just like you at the worst possible time, anything that you would want to leave me with?
I'm very optimistic. So my optimism at the moment would be, in a moment when everything's being shaken up and reassessed, maybe it's a good time to start an agency. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that I'm sure like you, and I don't know what the lockdown situation is like there, but we've pitched for and won things and not met the clients. We've pitched against bigger companies with way more glamorous receptions and tons more staff, and we're equal footing. More or less, there's a much more focus on the thinking and the work doing it like this. I mean, I would hope that we don't do it like this forever, but for the moment, it might be a positive thing.
Yeah. Well, Dave, thank you so much for your time. I know it's the end of your day. It's just the start of mine. So very inspiring conversation.
Pleasure. Good luck. Good luck with the agency.
Thank you, sir. You too. So one thing I want to mention is this was actually recorded like 3 months, maybe even 4 months before I'm posting it. So I wonder how he's going to feel when I finally send it to him and say, hey, we posted this. Dave, if you're listening to this, you know, hopefully you enjoy the episode. Sorry for the delay. Definitely not something that I like to do, but hopefully you dig the end result. Thank you for coming on. Also, Dave has a really amazing and successful blog called Stuff from the Loft. I highly recommend checking it out. And yeah, thanks, Dave. More episodes to come. And I will see you guys on the flippy flop.